Our presentation this morning is by Dr. Lee Ward, and the topic is proportional representation. Dr. Lee Ward teaches political science at Campion College at the University of Regina. He is the author of several books on political and constitutional theory. Dr. Ward is also the co-spokesperson for the Saskatchewan chapter of Fair Vote Canada, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to meaningful electoral reform in Canada. Dr. Ward.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to speak at your service today. I spoke here a few years ago about Thomas Jefferson, who was, of course, a great admirer of Unitarianism, and I'm delighted to return. Today I'd like to make the case that Canada needs to reform our electoral system and that some version of proportional representation is our best choice. First, I think everyone realizes that this is a unique moment in our nation's political history. Three of the four major national political parties have publicly committed to the idea of electoral reform. The federal government has struck a multi-party parliamentary committee to recommend a plan for reform, possibly due to report as soon as December. In fact, the committee met this week for the first time, this past Tuesday. I'm happy to report that the Liberal majority government, elected with only 39.5% of the vote, I might add, has even agreed to proportional representation on the committee based on the results of the last election. So that means that no single party holds a majority on the committee, because no party won a true mathematical majority in the election. Of the 12 members, 5 are Liberal, 3 Conservative, 2 NDP, 1 Bloc Québécois, and there is Elizabeth May of the Green Party. The government has said it is guided by 5 principles: to reduce the distortion between popular vote and the share of seats, to strengthen the link between voter intention and election of representatives, to foster greater civility and collaboration, to avoid undue complexity in the voting process, and finally, to ensure that MPs understand local conditions. The government has promised a summer of consultations as MPs hold meetings across the country. I encourage you to participate in these meetings, and this morning I would ask you to consider advocating for proportional representation, or PR. But first, I have to defend the proposition that reform is necessary, that there is a genuine problem with the current system that we call first-past-the-post. In keeping with the racing analogy, in first-past-the-post, the horse or candidate that crosses the finish line first wins. And no matter how closely the others follow, they're all losers. The problem with this in the context of elections, as opposed to horse racing, I suppose, in the context of elections, the problems here are several. First, the system produces false majorities in which a party that wins a plurality of, say, 40% or even less of the popular vote typically wins the majority of seats in the parliament. In modern Canadian history, only 2 national majority governments have actually won more than 50% of the vote. The distorting effects of first-past-the-post are so bad that we have seen provincial elections with absolutely absurd results, in which one party wins all, or practically all, the seats with less than 60% of the vote. The other 40% of the electorate effectively don't exist. We've also seen victories without even pluralities, when the party that wins the greater number of popular votes loses to another party that has won more seats. The reason for this is that in first-past-the-post, winning a seat by a single vote gives you all of the seat. There's no power sharing. There's no proportionality. The party that wins a lot of seats narrowly does better than a party that wins fewer seats by a wide margin, and may, in fact, have more support in the country. First-past-the-post benefits parties with support in concentrated regions. And in a country like Canada that is already very regional, this only exacerbates divisions.
A regional party like, for instance, the Bloc Québécois could win scores of seats with less than 5% of the vote, while another party with 20% of the vote nationally is often lucky to win a handful of seats. The essential problem with First Past the Post is that it is not fair. It treats voters differently depending on where they live. It means unless you vote for the winning candidate in your riding, your vote is wasted. It does not help to elect a representative. No wonder voter turnout in Canada is one of the lowest in the world. First Past the Post is only even a quasi-reasonable system if you only have two parties, like the United States, but Canada has been a multi-party democracy for over 100 years. The deeper philosophical or even spiritual problem in our electoral system is that First Past the Post rests on a certain idea of winning and losing that does not belong in a diverse multi-party democracy. Parties and candidates lose elections, but voters should never lose elections. Every citizen is a member of the general will of society, and his or her views should be reflected in some material way in the government. Okay, this is the problem. Well, what are the options for reform? One option is the ranked ballot or preferential vote, which is rumored to be favored by the Prime Minister. In this system, voters rank their preferences on a ballot, and the candidates with the least support are removed, and their votes, second or even third preferences, are redistributed until one candidate gets 50% plus one of the vote and wins. Supporters of the ranked ballot claim that it keeps local representation and it makes sure that every elected MP has a majority of votes, albeit not everyone's first choice. They also say that it will make politics more civil, as all parties will have an interest in playing nice so that they can be people's second preferences, if not their first. The argument against ranked ballots is that it would produce all the same distortions of First Past the Post, but only on steroids, because adding second choices to first choices will only exaggerate false majorities. More worryingly, there is evidence indicating that ranked ballots would soon reduce Canada to a U.S.-style two-party state, effectively eliminating all the smaller parties. It's also suspected that the Liberal government think it will benefit them, as the center party will get the second choice from the left and the second choice from the right. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that practically no one in the world uses ranked ballots for their national parliamentary elections. Ask, if you hear representatives of the government mentioning this as some kind of very moderate proposal, ask them, who does this beyond the local municipal level? Nobody. In my view, ranked ballot would quite possibly be worse than what we have now. Another possibility is the single transferable vote, or STV. This system uses a ranked ballot, but it elects candidates in multi-member constituencies. STV works on the basis of an electoral quotient required for election based on dividing the number of votes by the number of candidates. So, for example, Regina could become one single constituency that elects four members. The voter could choose from multiple candidates from each party. If four candidates do not reach the quotient on the basis of first preferences, then the ranked ballot kicks in, and the bottom or the lowest vote getters are eliminated, and their vote is redistributed to other candidates until you have four candidates who've been elected with the quotient. STV does better reflect a diverse electorate than the First Past the Post that we have now. It's used in elections around the world, for instance, in the Australian Senate, the Northern Irish Assembly, and it was proposed by the Citizens Forum in British Columbia in 2005. The downsides of single transferable vote are that it typically requires enormous rural ridings. You could have multi-member constituencies in a city like Regina, but you turn the rest of Saskatchewan into almost one or two giant ridings. The other problem is that it is complex to figure out. You will have to have a calculator and take your time figuring out the final results on election night. And it still means that many voters will waste their votes for candidates who will not be elected or parties that will not be represented. So, what about PR, proportional representation? PR is widely used across the globe. There is nothing radical about PR. In fact, a ranked ballot for a parliamentary election is much more radical than PR. PR is used in many European democracies, Germany, Scotland, the Scandinavian countries. The essence of PR is that representation in Parliament accurately reflects the party's vote share, so that 30% of the vote equals 30% of the seats in Parliament. Often PR systems include a threshold to discourage fringe or extremist parties. Sometimes the threshold is as low as 1% or as high as 5%, as in Germany. How does PR work? The principle of proportionality is very flexible. You could, for instance, have a pure form of PR in which the entire country becomes one single multi-member constituency, and members of parliament are appointed by the party leader on the basis of that party's share of the vote. An example of this system would be Israel. No one is seriously proposing this model of PR for a large, diverse federal state like Canada. The model of PR most often discussed in the Canadian context is what is called mixed member proportional. This is the system used, for instance, in Germany. This system keeps the current first-past-the-post model, but it adds a guarantee of proportionality through what are known as top-up seats, given to parties that win fewer seats than their vote share should give them. I think this is the best option for Canada, so let's examine it in a little more detail. Mixed member proportional would keep the local representation that many Canadians feel is important. Who is my MP from my area? We would still elect the MP for Regina Louvain, this riding, and we would elect him or her by a plurality of votes on election night. So you would avoid the massive rural ridings. In fact, large provinces like Ontario could be broken into regional blocks and then top-up seats applied to, say, for instance, Eastern Ontario or Northern Ontario. And that way, you would actually increase regional representation. Okay, hold on. Aren't there at least two problems with this? First, aren't you going to have MPs who are not directly elected by the people? And thus, you're creating two kinds of MPs. Real ones, who are elected by the people, and phony ones, who are not. Also, doesn't top-up MPs mean that Parliament will get bigger? You will have more politicians. Okay, allow me to respond. First, in mixed member proportional systems, the voter normally has two ballots, one to choose your local MP and the other to support a party. The second ballot can and often does include a list of candidates that the parties put forward as potential MPs or potential top-up MPs. This second ballot would act effectively like a U.S. party primary. Thus, these MPs would be chosen by the voters, not by party bosses in Ottawa. Another option would be to draw the top-up MPs from among the top finishers among a party's losing candidates. These may be candidates who have lost their riding by a handful of votes, and thus they can hardly be accused of having no support from voters. Would you have two kinds of MPs? Yes, you would. But there is no evidence that this has ever been an issue in Germany or Scotland or any country that employs this form of PR. In fact, people tend to like the idea that they have not just one, but several representatives they can contact and speak for them. Would we need more MPs? Likely, yes, you would. But probably, in a country like Canada, probably no more than an additional 30 or 35 extra MPs. Personally, I think the expense is well worth getting a government for which the Canadian people actually voted. What are the advantages of PR? If we relate PR to the federal government's purported criteria for reform, I think the answer is crystal clear. PR eliminates distortion. 30% of the votes, more or less, means 30% of the seats. PR also achieves a strong link between voter intent and electing a representative. There are no wasted votes. No one has to settle for their second or third choice. As long as the party you vote for meets the threshold, which may again be 1%, it may be 5%, as long as your party reaches the threshold, your vote will count towards electing a representative. PR fosters cooperation because it is unlikely in a multi-party system like Canada, it is unlikely that any party will ever win a majority. What that means, therefore, is that governments will typically be coalitions involving several political parties. Critics say, aha, PR will produce dreaded political instability. Again, there's no evidence of this in any advanced democracy that uses PR. In fact, the Canadian practice of minority governments produces much more instability with elections every year to 18 months. I think coalitions and power sharing would actually be a stabilizing influence in a country as diverse as Canada. PR is less complex than single transferable vote. You won't need to whip out your calculator. But it is more complicated than the system we have now. But I suggest it's impossible to eliminate complexity completely. Simplicity is not always a virtue. Dictatorships are simple, but I don't recommend one. Finally, PR countries tend to elect more women and minorities and have among the highest quality of life in the world. I need to discuss one last issue before I conclude today. You've likely heard the claim from some quarters that there needs to be a referendum in order to change the electoral system. I have to admit that I'm conflicted on this because I support national referendums for constitutional change. I would welcome a referendum on abolishing the Senate. I would welcome a referendum on abolishing the monarchy. But as important as it is, electoral reform is not constitutional change. It is an amendment to the Canada Elections Act. It does not impair anyone's constitutional rights. It does not alter federal, provincial jurisdictions. Our electoral system is a mechanism, a device that we should feel capable of improving and testing in order to see the effects of trial and error. We had referenda in British Columbia and in Ontario on this issue, and I was disappointed that they failed. I had hoped that our provinces could act as laboratories of democracy, but alas, poorly resourced reform initiatives abandoned by self-interested politicians will rarely succeed in a system that favors the status quo. We won't really know the value of PR for Canada until we see it in practice and can test it. You wouldn't buy a car without a test drive. My proposal then is to introduce a mixed member PR system through legislation, but with a stipulation that there must be a referendum on whether to maintain it, whether to keep it or not, after we have had the experience of two elections with the new system. This is what they did in New Zealand when they switched from first past the post to PR, and it seemed to work. In conclusion, the next few months will be very important for, could be very important for Canadian democracy. Every election is about the future, and I hope that some form of PR is in our electoral future. Thank you, and I'm happy to entertain any questions or comments.
Check.
Yes. Okay. Well,
Thank you. That was a very interesting talk. It helps to clarify the issues, for me at least. My question was actually about implementation, and you mentioned what was done in New Zealand, and I think that's the issue. Like, even if you think this is the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread, you put it in power and there's a lot of conflict comes up. How do you back out if you have? Can you talk a little bit about some of the implement? Is this working? Can you talk about some of the other ways that PR was implemented in, like, Scotland or Germany, as well as New Zealand? Did they have a back-out mechanism, for example?
Sure. Well, the German system came after the war, and it was considered to be a way to correct some of the problems in the democracy prior to the rise of Hitler, where PR actually, in a kind of pure form, was employed in the 1920s and 30s in Germany, and it was seen as one of the causes of instability that produced the Nazis. And one of the things that defenders of PR, like myself, often have to respond to is this accusation that it produces political instability. You'll have so many elections and it'll be impossible to form governments. I think that's not the lesson of the 1930s in Germany, frankly. That's the lesson of World War I. That's the lesson of a country that didn't have democratic traditions. That's the lesson of a country that had deep, deep traditions of anti-Semitism. The Nazis came from something else, not from proportional representation. And in fact, there are many ways that even the regime, the Weimar regime, could have stopped the rise of the Nazis. So the thinking was, after World War II, that Germany needed to have a stabilized system that combined local representation with party identification, and it's been very stable. German governments have been very stable. The coalitions have lasted for years. We had right and left parties working together. The Scottish example is interesting because Scotland is a country that comes from our system, or I guess we come from their system, the British parliamentary system. First past the post, it's been around hundreds of years. If it was good enough for Lord Simcoe, it's good enough for us, kind of mentality. And when the Scots got their own parliament in 1999, they said, great tradition, we don't want it. We're starting fresh. Nobody who has introduced a new democracy in the modern period has imitated us. Nobody has said, I want that system they got in Canada and America. They've all introduced elements of PR or single transferable vote. And the Scots said, we're going to have the same kind of system where you can vote for your member of the Scottish Parliament from Glasgow East, but Glasgow will also be one single multi-member constituency where we will have representatives based on their vote share. And we have two kinds of MPs, and I think it's a great example of a response to this question, are you going to have real MPs and sort of phony ones? In Scotland, the leader of the Conservative Party was a top-up MP, and she was the leader of the party. The Conservatives couldn't win a riding in the big cities in Scotland, but they got 15, 17% of the vote. They had to be represented somehow, so she was their representative. No one ever said, you're not a real MP. So I think it's a good example of how you would do that. And the New Zealand example of referendum, I think, is a really interesting one because it speaks to the legitimate concerns Canadians have. I mean, our system is the devil we know. And if we change it, are we going to have this kind of regret later? I think if you have a referendum after two kicks at the can with this new system, it gives people a genuine chance to sort of to trial and error and to test it out. Thank you.
It seems to me that one of the real impediments to democracy in Canada is the power of the PMO. And I'm wondering if you can comment on that and possibly what implications proportional representation might have to that.
Great question. I mean, one of the things, too, I'd say to sort of expand on that point is the general sense of centralization of power in Canada, that even the parliament we elect is really just a show of democracy, a very small group of people around the prime minister are the ones who actually make the decisions. I think PR would have a liberating effect in the Canadian system because you would take it out of the control of a single party. I'm firmly convinced that if we had a PR system in Canada, we would not have one party winning the majority. So right there, you're opening up the process. It wouldn't be just Harper's PMO or Trudeau's PMO. There's going to be at least two parties who are going to be working together, and right there, you've opened it out. I think elected MPs would be more important than backroom political operators, because they would be the ones who actually decide whether coalition governments survive or fall. And they represent their regions, they represent their peoples. So I think you would actually see the power and the influence of spin doctors and backroom deals wouldn't mean as much, when the fact of the matter is coalitions are going to have to be open negotiations. They'll have to be verified. Every few months, you're going to have to go back to your coalition partners and make sure that are their supporters happy, or is there some danger the coalition will fall? And that's not instability. That's democracy. That's representing the people who actually voted for these parties. So I think it would have a wonderful effect in decentralizing.
Hi. The part I don't understand is how the percent works. Is it based on, like, when the parliament dissolves and that existing percentage, or for the different parties?
It would be the result of an election night. So, for instance, if in Saskatchewan, on election night, in a federal election, the Green Party got 15% of the vote but didn't elect any members in Regina Louvain, when we redistribute the seats, those pop-up seats would go to the Green Party. They would get a member of parliament who represents them. Or if it was 30% for the Red Party, if they didn't get the same number of seats that they should, they would get a member from this sort of top-up seats. So that you're looking at the election results that night, not how many seats did you win, but how many votes did you get. And if you got more votes than seats proportionally, then you get these top-up. What happens if a party wins more seats than it really should? Let's say they won 30% of the seats but only got 25% of the vote. You don't take away any seats from them. You give seats to the other parties so that everybody winds up with the correct amount. So it's kind of, you care about what happens in your riding. So Regina Louvain, that night we look to see who wins. But that's only the first question. Then the second question is, now how did the people of Saskatchewan as a whole vote? And then you're going to have to make some adjustments. But I don't think it would be overly complicated, but it adds that second stage to things. Well, it'll be in the law. It'll say that a party should have the same number of representatives as its vote share. So when you look at it, the Elections Canada would basically say the Red Party got 30% of the vote but only got 20% of the seats. So we have 7 top-up seats in Saskatchewan. That means 3 of them will go to the Red Party. 2 of them will go to the Yellow Party. It won't be party bosses deciding. It would be Elections Canada. They would just look at the results and say, well, this is what the law says we have to do. Yeah, because if it was the party bosses, I wouldn't trust that either.
You mentioned the likelihood that there would need to be 30, 35 more MPs in Canada. I'm not understanding how where that number comes from and how they would be allocated.
Yeah. You've got the current, so what you're doing in the system I'm proposing, you have the current parliament we have now. But we know it produces, same number. It produces distortion. So the only way to get proportionality is you have to add seats to parties to get their vote share and their seat share to the same. Pardon me? Well, that's what Canadians don't want to do. They don't want to make these massive ridings. They want to keep the riding they have. So if you want to keep the system we have, because you're familiar with Regina Louvain, you're familiar with how we vote now, the only way you can get proportionality is you have to have this pool of other MPs that you can now put in. In Ontario, when they devise a system like this and they put it to a referendum, in Ontario they figured for 14 million people, if they had, I think it was 27 or 28, they would be able to always make sure that it balanced out. Because you have to have a certain number to get the proportionality. Because if I said, for instance, you'd only need 5 more MPs, well, that doesn't make sense. Because to top up, to make sure a party's vote share equals the same number, you're going to have, well, maybe we have to give the Green Party 10, we have to give the Red Party 6, we have to... So there will be more MPs. There's no question about that. The parliament will have to be bigger. This was what the opponents of the system in Ontario called the More Politicians Act. It was going to just create more politicians. Well, maybe, but you'd also get a government people actually vote for. Unlike the current system where the government in Ontario, I think they did won less than 40% of the vote last time, and they have majority. And they can effectively do whatever they like. But you will have to have more seats. And maybe I'm not accurate in saying between 30 and 40, but I don't think it would be more than 40 seats for the whole of Canada to always be able to balance out. You could have it flexible enough that you say we can, even Elections Canada could look at the numbers to make sure and say, well, if we need to add one or two more, we can do it that way. But I think you definitely have to have more MPs.
Thank you for your presentation. I've been waiting for an opportunity to find out how all of this works. But it is fairly complicated, and even your presentation today to keep all of these facts in order is difficult. So I do hope, however it happens, there's an awful lot of presentations like you're making today in the community so that people really understand what these options represent. I'm a little bit confused in the sense that how are the top-up candidates selected? And you said something about you would vote for your representative and you'd maybe vote for the party for the top-up voters. Well, being a Liberal, I vote for my Liberal candidate, and I'm going to vote for the Liberal top-up voter by party. So have I really changed anything? And the concern about coalitions, I think in some parts of the world they've been terribly dysfunctional. I'm sure some places they do work, and hopefully they would here too. And in the situation where we see in the U.S., which does have a two-party system, but where the Republicans have refused to work with in any way, shape, or form with the Democrats, it's totally dysfunctional. And if you end up with a coalition here in Canada and one party is so opposed to cooperating, then is it going to work? I don't know.
Yeah, good question. First, with respect to the ballot, so what you would do is you're a Liberal, so you would go into the voting station here in Regina Louvain, you'd vote for the Liberal candidate, but the polls have told you the Liberals are probably not going to win. Okay, so have I wasted my vote? No, because if more than 5% of people in Saskatchewan have also voted Liberal, regardless of their riding, then Liberals will win a seat, or maybe more. The second ballot, there'll be a list of candidates, and the Liberal Party will have put a number of names of local Liberals who could be a top-up MP. So if the Liberals wind up with more than whatever the threshold is, you haven't won in Regina Louvain, but it doesn't mean you have lost. You will still have representation, a Liberal MP from Saskatchewan, and, oh, okay, so there's four Liberals on the list here. Oh, this one I like. That would be my choice. That's what I say. It's like an American primary system where the Democratic Party put five choices up, and you pick which Democrat you like best to represent the party. So that's why it would play that function. Because otherwise, if you walk into the voting station knowing that your party has very little chance of winning that riding, you might as well have stayed home. You actually don't contribute to anything. But under this system I'm proposing, you will lose this riding, but your party vote will matter because it will likely produce some kind of number that will allow for representation, at least one or two. And the other question about coalitions, I think, is a good one. But again, I think in Canada we're a little dishonest because we allow minority governments to be this sort of magical thing that allows us to avoid coalitions. Minority governments are a form of coalition, a very uneasy one, very unstable ones. The government cannot survive without support of other parties, and they typically last between a year to 18 months. I'll give you a good illustration of how coalitions might be more important. In the 2010 election in the UK, if you remember, the Conservative Party won the most seats, but not enough to form a majority. And in Britain, they call this a hung parliament. And the Conservative Party leaders, David Cameron, Osborne, sat around and said, what are we going to do on election night? We don't have enough to control the House. What's the options? And somebody said, well, we'll go the Canadian way. We'll try a minority government. And Cameron, I think to his credit, said, no, too unstable. I want a coalition. And he reached out to the Liberal Democratic Party, and he said, a real coalition. You will join the government. You will have ministers of my government who are of your party. and it lasted 5 years. Now, you can debate whether it was smart for the Liberals to do it or not, because they wound up getting clobbered in the next election. But in terms of how democracy works, I prefer that system to the current one, to the practice of minority governments. And the places where the coalitions are unstable, I think Israel would be an example, it is so different from the Canadian context. I mean, the Israeli system, the whole country is one riding. It's all party bosses. Nobody ever runs for a seat. They just select these people who keep coming back, and there's all kinds of factions, and they have a very low threshold. The German system is a much better idea, 5%, so the fringe and smaller parties have to actually get, you know, a fair chunk of support. And those systems, they're not very unstable at all. I think they're much more stable, actually, than ours.
Well, I think there's many more comments and questions to come, but we're kind of running short of time. Sure. Hopefully you'll stay behind for a coffee with us and entertain a few more people downstairs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.